Service Course Report. We're recording on October 3rd, 2025. My name is Ed Philbrick. I'm joined by Kurt and Darren Stockton. Today, we're going to go over what's been going on in the cycling world, the World Championships, talk a little bit about what it was like to be a junior racing in Southern California in the 1980s. And then we'll hit some of our normal segments. So if you want to watch us, you can watch us on YouTube and Spotify. If you want to listen to just audio, find us on Apple Podcast and Amazon Podcast. So my name's Ed Philbrick. I've been racing since 1983 with these guys. Not all the time were we always doing the exact same racing. I raced a little on the track. These guys probably did a little of this, a little of that. They raced downhill. DS, what's your racing history?
My racing history started out with BMX bikes as a wee lad. Back in the days when you modified your own Schwinn before there were like actual pre-sold BMX bikes. Worked that into road cycling as an amateur and then as a professional for several seasons, and then switched to professional downhill and raced that for another 7-8 seasons, and have continued to work in racing as a coach and a product designer after my own career in racing ended.
How about you,
Dan? Yeah, and me, well, you know, I was thinking about this because we've touched on different points, and we did talk about the fact that we all met at Santa Barbara Middle School. I think it was, yeah. What, 1980?
80, I believe.
1980.
Yeah, right? Fall of 80.
And that was, I mean, I know for me, and I believe for you guys, it was just a huge influence on getting us really into riding bikes, just because of those bike trips we did.
Yeah.
Before that, like Darren was saying, you know, we raced and rode BMX and dirt bikes and stuff. But, you know, it was just like something that you did as a kid. You know, and then I was thinking about that too. And then there was a point where we were all roommates together when we still racing bikes, you know, and that got me thinking. I'm like, wow, we were roommates. And that was long after we were juniors. So, I was talking with Ed about it, you know, before we started recording here, and I found some cool images of like when we were roommates and then, some stuff from those junior years. So, you know, we'll start with this one, which was, this was our quiver of bikes when we lived
at the Franciscan Village in Carpinteria.
Franciscan Village in Carpinteria, yeah. So we're looking, and we're starting on this end. I know that first bike upside down, that's a Schwinn twin tandem that I got from our grandparents. And so I think the wheels are off. I don't know. Maybe that was cleaning them or getting some. It's that weird Schwinn size, getting some tires for them, possibly. But then we go down the line there, Ed. I think those next couple of bikes are yours.
Yep.
Yeah, Merlin Titanium, early flight Titanium saddle, a 2-bolt Suntour Superb seat post, which we will talk about 2-bolt seat posts more today. Yes. The first generation RockShox, King headset. Answer bars, Onza bar ends, Shimano XT. Those are probably the first edition SPD pedals. Summerlin Cycles black water bottle. titanium cages. Those would have been like first generation King titanium cages.
I think
the name of the brand. Probably a Panaracer smoke tire. Might be that Specialized ground control, and the front tire was probably a Fisher Fat Track. Mavic rims. Then moving to the second bike, that's my cross bike. Was a Bruce Gordon Rock and Road touring bike, which you could make into a nice cross bike. And then it starts the rolls, 15 roll saddles in a row there. And I'll let KS take the next one.
I was going to say, like, Led Zeppelin has that song, Whole Lot of Love. I was thinking this one would be a whole lot of rolls, considering I think there's 15 bikes there. And other than the tandem and your flight in the first shot, I believe every other bike has a rolls on it.
It does, yeah.
So that then was we're like looking. A rolls cachet right there.
And then that third bike there is a Denti.
Yeah.
I had that thing set up as a fixed gear, single speed to ride in the winter.
I believe those are correct. Both are Dentis, the two white, those two next ones there. In a row. Yeah.
You had one. Yeah. So one you had set up maybe as a road bike, and I had it set up for a fixed gear on the road. But then
Well, stop on the Denti a little bit. Dentis were ridden by the Mexican national team, or the Mexican team, which would be up racing Redlands and racing in LA. And that team would have Raul Alcala, who 7-Eleven quickly realized they ought to recruit. And I think they recruited him right before, I want to say, 86 Redlands, and then took him over to Europe. And, you know, he wore the best white young rider's jersey, won two stages in Grand Tours, I believe.
Yep.
He's quite a legend. And those Denti guys were quite a force in Southern California. I think that Denti had something to do with Mexico, like the importer was down there, or somebody had licensed the name from Italy and was building those down there. But anyway.
I remember we had the DK deal is how we got Doug Knox, our coach, was involved in the Denti deal. And that was maybe that through a Velo Pasadena deal or something. But I just remember the funniest thing about it was in that area, you know, we had been racing like Land Sharks and stuff and getting custom frames made. And we told them, hey, we want this top tube, we want this seat angle, and we specified a head tube. And Doug came back and he's like, yeah, he goes, they just figure out the head tube based on the head tube angle. Excuse me, based on everything else. And I was like, wait, what? And they're like, yeah, depending on where you seat angle you want and everything else, they just give you the head tube that they want. And there was something weird about them. The head tubes were either really small or, but the angle was a little weird. I never ended up using it as a full established member of the arsenal. I think it got put together and written and was not that great.
We might have lost a little bit of that, DS. You kind of cut out. But, yeah, the angles were wonky. I vaguely remember something about that, too.
Yeah, so, the Denti.
This one. And then
– here we go.
So here it is angle. From the opposite angle. Right? Yeah. And
there's Land Sharks. There's Cross Bikes. There's
set of crutches. Surfboard.
A big frame. Bike Pro bike bag. Those are two Yeti mountain bikes, the two neon forks right there.
Yeah, you can see those.
AccuTrack forks.
AccuTrack forks, right?
That was one of the ones sorry, KS, go ahead.
Oh, the Yeti Ultimates that we had, huh?
The Yeti Ultimates. That was my Yeti Ultimate, was the one that got sold in Japan after LeMond blessed it at the Greg LeMond Super Challenge, which we told that story about the 2K time trial on some spicy unagi.
Yeah, and I think this red one is your cross bike here, DS.
Yep.
Close to the front. Yep.
That's a purple Land Shark, the next one.
Yeah, I got a couple Land Sharks there. That was that purple shark I rode at the 90 Worlds. And then another one with the drop-ins, the Scott drop-in bars, which we talked about. So anyway, that was some fun stuff. So that was when we were roommates. But then it was like we were getting a little off track, but talking about these junior days. So this is the Willows Road Race. So this is East County, San Diego, off of I-8. This is a junior field in 1982. So this is yours truly right here in the center.
Get those elbows in, KS.
Yeah. David Brinton there. maybe that's Tom Hodges right there.
Possibly.
In that Broncoli. But then I was thinking, no, because we didn't – maybe in 82 we didn't have those jerseys yet. So R10. And then there's a close-up of this. That's probably that same sequence. I got the suffer face going pretty well.
You got the
well
grimace
there.
Going, the KS grimace.
Yeah. So this is these were our big junior fields, the Kucharik Hairnet.
Yeah.
Funny thing is that's now the Viejas parking lot right there. It's a massive complex shopping center, casino.
Oh, really?
Right there. And you can drive through and sort of visualize the finish line. Ralph Elliott and his RV is missing, but
right.
It's
for people to remind you, Willows Road Race was the biggest kind of early season race, or one of the biggest, not only in SoCal, but probably had some status all through California. So it was like our Milan San Remo or you know, one of those in the amateur scene. Maybe not quite a Flanders, maybe a Gent-Wevelgem. Maybe it had some Flanders status, you know. It was pretty important. It was kind of the race to win.
So then we moved
to eight. I've gone back and looked at the climb recently, and it's a lot steeper and longer than I remember it. You know, I remember it being hard, you know, early season. It was hard to get your racing legs in that race. But when I go and look at the climb now, I go, oh, of course it was hard. It was pretty steep, and it went up and over the overpass. It was a hard climb.
I feel like that's maybe a common phenomenon when you go back and ride hills now. They all seem harder and steeper than they did back then.
And you only had a 4221 back then too.
That's right. Mashing it through.
Yeah.
All right. We got some more.
So we're going into, is the next, this is 83. This is the companion criterium, which was always on Sunday. Willis was on a Saturday. So this is the junior criterium, Sonny Hong there in the middle. We might have talked about Sonny when we were talking about Dave Wong when we introduced our What Went Wong segment. So Sonny greased us all pretty handily. He's still way before the line. Tom pretty Atkins there.
You're pretty low there, KS, over on the far left. Get an arrow. Jonathan Milan could use some of that these days.
Yeah, and I still have – I think I had the Jonathan Milan head bob back then too. So, yeah. And then
Britton again, Butterworth, I think. That's Britton just to the right of you. And then maybe Butterworth is the next guy over in the Centurion jersey. You could tell by the black stripes and the
Dave Wong right there.
Yep.
Under Sonny's left arm. So, yeah, 83. That criterium so early that year. And then that same year, the national championships were in San Diego. So I found a couple of these.
Oh, yeah, look at all these.
Yeah, if anybody out there, if you look at Facebook, if you look up Sam Emerson photos, Sam Emerson was a photographer who ran that junior team, the Raleigh team Darren was on. So
yeah.
I believe this is right around the last, I think this climb is the last lap going up the Bud Light wall.
Balboa Park.
There were sponsors there. Balboa Park, San Diego, that's it. So Craig Schomer, myself.
Zippy.
I think we got Matt Caron, Darko Garral in there.
Garral! Like
Tom Harberts, James Urbanus, David Farmer. You know, all guys that ended up racing with, you know, when we were juniors a little bit more.
This is top tier talent right there of that generation.
It was, yeah. Nickman was already off the front. He ended up winning that day. Yeah. And I was telling Ed before we started recording, I know there's another box. I have some photos from that era, like from when we were there. And so this is the same Schomer, Scott Spies, myself, looks like Aaron Durrance, again, Matt Caron, Darko, Tim Hintz. Yeah. Big junior races. I mean, those guys were coming out from the Midwest to race, you know, who knows if they flew out or drove out.
Go back to the UCSD photo. We wanted to point out Shimano AX brakes. KS was early to Aero. AX brakes, and then the AX, you know, no internal cable routing, or with internal cable routing.
Yeah, the levers.
Yeah.
That was Shimano was sponsored, or the SBBC was still sponsored by Shimano that year. I think the next year they maybe became Centurion Sun Tour.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We were talking about that. Yeah. I forgot I had ridden those brakes. They were Aero. They looked really cool. They didn't work very well.
Like most Aero brakes.
Yeah. And I believe that is a Mike Selman's frame I was riding with painted in with Centurion stickers on it. So Selman's was a frame builder in Santa Barbara.
That would be a great retro test to see which worked. I don't know if you want to say better or worse, the Shimano AX brakes or the Campy Delta brakes, which were a later generation.
Neither. You could throw those Modolas in there too. I think they would probably win the least functional. All right. So there, and then, so this is 84. So this is 84, no more Aero levers. And I think this was the year we were all Central Coast Velo and just didn't have our jerseys yet. So this is up in San Jose. Sean Wilson there, who I raced juniors with, and Sean's a doctor down that Loma Linda. I think that's Sheldon Smith. So 10-speed drive was still kind of a NorCal regional / national team back then. So I was looking at that. I think that was the year we rode on the Fagines.
Yeah, I was going to say the blue with the black headset.
Yep, and three sets of Bonotto tape there, it looks like, as well. That shiny handlebar tape. So you want cushy padded tape? Well, we didn't have it back then. Yeah. So
that's a great shot.
Yeah, that one's pretty cool. And then I found this one. We go to color. So this is that same year.
Yeah.
And there used to be two series of races out of Wisconsin every
Super
summer.
Week, yeah.
There was
Oh,
Super
yeah.
Week, and there were the Wisconsin Milk Races that were sponsored by the Dairy Board, I believe. And I went out and raced the milk races that year. I think I was 18. I was like, yeah, I should just 18 or 19. You should just go out and race. So I went out and
Yeah.
raced. And I, you know, you look at all these guys. I mean, other than Lowell Kellogg here, who was same age as me. So we were probably first year seniors there, first or second, you know, the entire 7-Eleven team there, you've got Leonard Nitz with his back to us. And then
Yeah.
I, maybe that's Steeda's forehead there. Not sure.
Looking a little linkish.
Yeah. Andy Weaver.
Andy Weaver. Yeah.
Finney right there. Davis Finney, Tom Schuler, myself here in the red jersey. It looks like Carmichael, just the side of his head before he was on 7-Eleven when he was still on Schwinn Icy Hot.
Is that Clark Natwick underneath Davis's head right there? Or,
no,
I,
that's
no,
the
not
touring
Clark.
team. So that was
Oh,
a that
yeah,
was that
that's right.
Midwest team. You
I
know,
remember that
Mike
face.
King might know who that is, but I'm not exactly sure who that is. Yeah, but this was another one like 84. So this was right before those guys were they're all getting ready for the Olympic trials in the Olympics.
Yeah.
And this was the racing. So you just went out and you got to line up with all these guys. You know, there might be some people out there that are familiar with a guy named Taylor Finney. Well, this is his dad right here.
Davis.
Davis, still the, I think the winningest U.S. racer ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a cool one.
That is a great
shot.
That's
it. Yeah. Yeah. And that was, yeah. Oh, and then we've got,
oh, yeah.
then we found some junior racing. So Ed, we were talking about this. Yeah. And we
the
thought
Rose Bowl.
You might've been moved off to the Olympic Training Center by this point.
Yeah. This might've been 85 right there. And I was living up at the Olympic Training Center.
That's what we were thinking. Yeah. So,
Dominic Feldy on the left. Yeah.
Feldy there.
Feldy.
Yeah.
Sadowski right behind Ed.
Yeah,
right there in
Ed,
the Broncoli.
Yep,
yep. Sadowski right to his right. Yep. That's JT in the white leather hairnet,
yep.
which we get to see him later, which I texted him on the way over. He says he has no recollection of the white hairnet because I was complimenting him on it. And I have no recollection either, but that thing is badass.
That's the only white Kucharik. Looks
yeah.
like Jeff Doyle right there too, huh?
Yep, Jeff Doyle.
Yeah. Is that Dan Stein?
No, it isn't. But that guy's in a couple other photos. I can't remember his name.
And
that's
Tully.
Sean Tully right there, yeah.
Sean Tully.
Yeah.
So yeah, there, we
that's
had
a great
very
one.
Robust junior cycling scene. So there's a couple more from these.
Yeah, there's probably
so this is also at the Rose Bowl.
50 to 75 riders in those fields. Like, can you imagine that now? Like, there's 12 juniors at a junior race now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's three across three junior categories.
Yeah.
All lumped into one.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's a great shot.
It's fun. I mean, you think that they have the Tour of California finish at the Rose Bowl, you know, back in like 16. I remember that Sagan one, but we were racing at the Rose Bowl, you know, a long time before that, right? 15, 25 years, 20, 25 years before that. Yeah, so pretty cool stuff here.
Got any more of those?
Yeah, there is one more. So here's
There's JT.
There's JT
sending
at the,
it right
JT
there.
JT right there, yeah. And we were laughing. We were looking at how massive JT's arms are. Compared to all those, but he was just kind of big compared to all
he
the other
was
juniors
built like
anyway.
That.
Yeah.
Dude, pretty stellar position though by JT. Look at that, you know. I mean, that could be transplanted to any time.
We keep talking about JT. His name's John Tack.
Yeah.
That's
to all,
me
to all
sitting on
JT.
His wheel there.
Yep.
Yeah, there's
Ed.
Ed
right there.
Sean Tully, who won the race to the left, I think.
Mark Doyle left. Again.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the year I was not there.
Not there. So that, and then here's that must be at the start there. So there's the Fagine.
That's Derek Emerson, whose father Sam is the one we were talking about, who a couple years later managed the Raleigh team.
Yeah.
And then JT in the background.
Yep.
That's my Fagine blue. It was probably a hand-me-down from KS. I got a King headset. Looks like Suntour brakes. Friction shifting, Bud Light water bottle from the Santa Barbara Triathlon, Marisi shoes, Broncoli helmet, and then JT in his white helmet behind.
Yeah.
The Kucharik. Yeah.
Those are great. Great shots.
Yeah, that's it. All right. So that was the intro, but we thought, you know, like where we came from. Well, we talked about the junior racing, you know, but the fact that we were roommates, And there used to be, I used to talk about it. Like, we raced in Central California. There were actually three racing regions in California when we were juniors, because there were so many racers. There was Southern California, there was Central, and there was Northern. And we each had our own district championships to qualify for the nationals, because that's how many riders there were. So just as a bit of reference to everyone out there.
Well, it's important to bring that up. Qualifying for nationals was not a given back then. You had to fight pretty hard at districts. I mean, maybe Central California districts weren't so bad, but the year we had to qualify out of Southern California, we had to, do a death march in Griffith Park. You
Griffith,
know,
Oh, yeah.
like 10 laps in the hot heat and pre-early catalytic converter smog. And that was a hard-fought day to get like top six or something to go to nationals, So,
Yeah, I think that would have
Yeah.
been, was that 85 the first year they did that?
Yeah.
I think, yeah. To
Haig
qualify, we went
won.
out into Milwaukee and raced.
Correct. Haig won in Griffith Park, or you beat him. I'm not sure which. I remember him showing up and I go, he's a track rider. And at that time, I didn't have a lot of respect for pursuiters and track riders. And I was like, really? He's going to show up and qualify? And he was pretty good.
Until he went to the front, then you had some respect for it for him.
I don't think I beat anybody at the Griffith Park Road Race. Well, I did qualify. Again, I'll pull that training log out. A top 20 probably got me there because we had so many people.
Training logs, yeah.
Those dang training logs. Well, what have you been doing riding, DS? We kind of threw this.
I've been top gravel dog lately riding. I've just been on the gravel bike, no mountain biking. I have been, I got, I think I may have mentioned in a previous pod, I have a tire coming up that I'm designing for Panaracer, a gravel tire. And so I've been kind of fast and thick in the testing phase. And so, as my Arid, is a new bike this year, I've been really just riding that a lot to get that feel and testing some different tires. And we have this whole series of trails, the ones that we rode on, some of them we rode on, some other ones that we didn't in pod number, I think three that was, where we were behind Summerlin. This whole, yes, pod three, there was this whole other section and the dirt was unbelievable. It was so good. You just like we were hitting these trails and coming down into the turns and you would go through and I'm just like, dude, we had just have to go ride back up and do that again. It was just so much fun. So that's been my gravel riding, mixing it up with the rain and getting into that good dirt, out there behind
Nice.
Summerlin up at Ealing's Park and down here in Carpinteria. That's what my rides have been. So I've been having a blast on those.
What about you, Ed?
Yeah.
Oh, we lost your audio. Well, we still don't have your audio. I'll say. While Ed's
Yeah.
sorting out his audio, I'm going to
Yeah,
what
what
I
were
do
your
I
rides, Chaos?
I had a good one last weekend. I went out with my buddy Chris Foyt, and did get a good graveler in last Saturday, about 3 hours. One of our loops that goes around the lake. Actually, we did kind of backward what we did the week before, and then it started raining, and it's kind of been raining off and on like almost all week. And so I've done some indoor cycling this week, and that's about it. I
How's
did
the
get a
indoor
new
form?
the indoor form is good. I'm right up there with the best for 55 minutes with a solid warm up and cool down.
Included in
Well,
the 55 minutes, you're
oh
saying,
yeah, included in the
or okay, got
55.
it, got it.
Exactly. It's amazing
One
how
thing I will
tired.
say, so for indoor training, I was just going to say when I started working out and working. And also working out with Peter Park over at Platinum Fitness here in Summerlin, that he was big on the indoor cardio and spin bikes and not like a nice stages one, but like this one brand that's a little more of an all-over workout brand, Concept 2, and they make skiers and all of that. And I really kind of got into the place of a good hard indoor workout that you can mix in. I would always choose to just go ride outside, but there are times, the year when it's dark out or something, you can get on and in an hour you can get a dang good workout, including the warm up and warm down.
Right,
It's
and
good.
oh, that's fun. And I teach at 7 a.m., so it's like you just kind of get up, We make a little coffee and go. And
right,
you're done by 8. So even sometimes I'll go ride in the afternoon. And then Robin teaches a 7 a.m. the other on Tuesday. I teach on Thursday. So the alarm goes off and we both just get up and go. So that's, it's kind of nice. And with teaching those classes, I get a complimentary membership at the fitness club here in Grass Valley. So
that always works.
That's an added bonus. So you get all that other stuff. Yeah. So doing that, and then maybe by next week, my new frame showed up this week. So I'm working on some stuff here in the house and the remodel. So it's still a work in progress, but I'll update that when it happens. So yeah, that, I mean, between life and everything is, yeah, it's keeping us busy for sure.
That's a hard one. We have a new bike sitting there. You want to get together and just don't quite have the time to do it. And you don't want to do it like partial measures, you know, like kind of, you got to like really get in. And at least for me, you want to sink your teeth into it.
Yeah. Well, I'll take like one segment. It's like, okay, I'm just going to figure out my Q factor bottom bracket spacing, or I'm just going to hook the brakes up, you know? And luckily I'm pulling some parts off of previous bikes. So like, I don't have to set my levers. It is a different size seat post, so I'm going to have to set the seat, and that always takes quite a while, but that's okay. It's kind of therapeutic, you know?
Yeah. So what about you, Ed? What rides have you been up on?
I did a pretty cool ride on Sunday. I did the Thug ride on Saturday. That was, you know, what it was. On Sunday, we had the 988 ride here in San Diego. It was the first time that it had taken place. A gentleman who's a local cyclist, Mickey Wojciech, he lost his brother at the age of 60. He committed suicide about 4 or 5 years ago. And so Mickey was raising money for the 988 phone number, which is, if you dial 988 on most cell phones, it'll connect you to the suicide prevention, which is, you know, like the last resort for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And so he raised $1,700. And he's a, you know, an exceptionally interesting individual. He went to the Soviet Union in the 1980s, maybe late 70s, early 80s, to do skateboarding and took a lot of photos there. And he just got back from like going to the 30th anniversary of some of those photos. He went back to Russia and he was telling me about traveling across borders and getting stopped and questioned about his paperwork and so forth. But you know,
your
he had
papers in order.
Your papers.
Yeah. So it was fun to ride with him and recognize his brother and raise money. And, you know, we all rolled together down to the top of Del Mar, to Torrey Pines and back. And, you know, just a, you know, feel good ride. And the Swami's cycling team joined us. So there was, you know, 30 or so people. It was a good day.
Nice. That sounds good.
On another pod, I'll tell my stories of being at the Baltic Sea Friendship Race and taking the train through Russia back into Finland and having the Soviet soldiers come into our room on the train and go through our stuff and all that.
He had exactly a 2.0 30-year version of that this time. He'd had it before. He's like, I was taking the train out of Russia. And they came on in the middle of the night and they're like, where's the American? This sounded like the 1980s, right? Where's the American? Yeah. Like they knew he was on board, you know, in the middle of the night, they're looking for him. So,
yeah.
I had one of those attempting to drive from Austria into Slovenia. And I unwisely thought I could save time by taking a smaller border crossing, not the main one off of the Autobahn. And maybe that would be a good one to have some good custom stories. And was like, you know, machine guns, take the passport, go sit inside for now. You know, they're just watching you try and sweat, see if you have anything to crack about. Yeah. So I think we've all had one of those.
Yeah. Those border ones. I know you've got a good Cytomax story going into Quebec as well. That's for another episode, I think.
Yeah, for another one.
That's a whole hour right there too.
Yes.
But so I will say we are, you know, just want to remind everybody, October 25th, the Bovine Classic in Atascadero.
Oh, yeah.
So the three amigos from the service course will be there. I don't know if the press release is out, but that's going to be our premier live event broadcast. So we're pretty stoked about that.
Yeah.
TheBovineClassic.com, the website, has all the info. We'll be there. There's a shakeout ride. I got my notes here. Thursday afternoon in Paso Robles at the Firestone Walker Tap Room. Check-in starts at 1:15. The ride rolls at 2 o'clock. It's about 2 hours, you know, a social conversational pace ride, 4 to 6 p.m. post-ride hangout and socializing. And then again, Friday morning, downtown Atascadero at the Sunken Gardens there at City Hall. Check-in is at 10, roll at 11. It's right there at Amsterdam Coffee, which is just off of the square there. And that'll be a good one. So all the details, exact locations, and you do have to sign up to RSVP for these events. They ask just to sign a waiver with there's so many logistics that go on to putting on events. So yeah, we'll be nice. There. And I know.
Get the VIP and you're in.
Yeah. And those rides, those shakeout rides, there's no cost to do them, but you do need to RSVP and sign up, and you just have to sign their online waiver as they request with the organization, with the crew from the Bovine and Bike Monkey, who helps produce the event with their crew. So looking forward to seeing people there. So come up and say hello.
Yeah, definitely. That's going to be great.
And it's a ride with some segments. It's not a race, but maybe we'll talk about some racing right now, because there's been some stuff going on.
Yeah. What did you guys see? What have you been watching?
Well, the crowds were spectacular in Africa. I mean, you can talk about the politics of the UCI and governing bodies and so forth, but the pure joy of the massive crowds was unbelievable. And, you know, drummers on the side of the road and just huge crowds, a lot of enthusiasm. I thought the circuit was kind of cool how they went out and they had that sort of lollipop climb, and the cobbled climbs were pretty spectacular. So I thought the visuals were excellent. And, you know, the surprise woman winning the Canadian, woman who won from Canada, that was spectacular. I wish I could remember her name, her second professional win.
Well, first Canadian world champion, right? Road world champion in the elite category. Elites.
Yeah, men or women.
Yeah, men or women.
Yeah. I mean, you were talking about the parkour and the climbs and that. And I, you know, what was pretty amazing, right? So you got the juniors, you've got the U23s, and you've got the elite racers. And I would say, you could almost say five of those six races were won solo. There were three riders that came to the line for the women's U23. Right. Mm-hmm. But that was kind of a slugfest because there were two French riders there. But only the junior women race came down to a sprint finish. Every other race was won solo or that one race with three riders, which just speaks to the attrition of the course. And like, if you didn't do your homework, you weren't going to be in there when it came to racing for the medals. So
well,
I think they did a good
30,
job.
Only 30 men finished the elite field.
Yeah.
And I think that's the lowest finishing percentage in history. Although I kind of noticed that when they go back to the circuit, people are like, I'm done. You know what I mean? Like,
definitely at Worlds.
Yeah. There's a little bit of early, you want to say, they exited because it was so hard. They also exited because their job was done and it was on a circuit and they just were done.
Yeah, I mean, really, there are three places at the Worlds, and those three, I mean, to finish the World Championships is pretty spectacular, even today.
Yeah, for sure. Well,
the other thing was cool was no road furniture, so very few crashes. You know, it just kind of showed to me, like, you take the road furniture out, which is, you know, your roundabouts, your curbs, your pylons, you know, they had like a barricade, pretty smooth, consistent course, and not a lot of crashes. I mean, there was one in the elite men, but not a lot of crashes.
Right.
Not like your normal stuff. Yeah, that's a good point.
That is a good comparison.
Yeah. Oh, someone's printer going?
Somebody's printing.
Yeah.
Printing checks.
That's what the mute button's for. Well, that was, I thought the Road Worlds, it was pretty spectacular. And like what Ed was saying, that was the thing I noticed, the crowds and just the sheer joy, enthusiasm of the people on the side of the road. And they were just happy to be there. They weren't, you know, like I didn't see a lot of the kind of drunken disorderly that you see at some other races, especially on the continent over in Europe, even cyclocross aside. So that was cool. And, yeah, I mean, they beautified up the city too. So hopefully we'll see more racing on the African continent.
Yeah, that course definitely, yeah. I was just going to say, it's definitely not only looked hard just because of the short, punchy nature, but then you throw in like the cobbled climbs as well. It's one thing trying to hang onto the back of a wheel up a steep hill when it's smooth pavement, and you can just dig in and focus on the wheel. But with them, when you're also trying to have the technique and maybe dial a bigger gear than you're used to or change up, you could definitely see how when people, you know, when they pop, they definitely pop and are gone quick.
Yeah. Well, and then... we did have a time trial as well. We were talking about the road race. I thought it was pretty cool in the women's time trial that Marlene Reusser, who we talked about in one of our early pods, where she had done well at the women's Giro and was looking good for the Tour de France Femme avec Zwift, and then had the early exit. And she came back and won the time trial, won her first world championship, which was in a Dutch sandwich, so with Van der Bruggen and Vollering in second and third. And then Remco won his third in a row. I mean, like, seeing someone like that's that dialed in the time trial, like if he gets his climbing just a little bit more. I remember a big Spanish guy in the 90s that was a phenomenal time trialist, and he climbed okay, and he won five tours. So
that's, you know, right.
I think it's possible for Remco.
Yeah. Yeah, it will really be interesting to see with that, and you double it up with a team that could go and potentially really, you know, having a strong GC contingent. Nothing against what Quickstep tried to do the last couple of seasons, but, you know, a couple climbers isn't the same as it going in with the team, you know, looking to win the tour, their whole focus.
I got to go close my door.
I like Remco, but I don't know about his mental tenacity. You remember the first year he won the Vuelta, how he cracked on that one climb, that one?
Yeah.
You know, he was phenomenal, and then he cracked. I just worry that he's going to be, if he's ever going to get his high mountain climbing in, he's going to be slightly inconsistent. So he's going to have to dominate with time trials, because he probably isn't going to be a consistent high mountain climber. Even if he loses a little weight, even if he's got a whole team with him. And then it's his mental game. I mean, We're going to talk about him and Seatpost Gate in a little bit here, but we've seen him struggle, you know, mentally from time to time, and I like him, but he's a little bit of a prima donna, so
yeah, loses his cool a bit.
Yeah, that's true, but I mean, speaking of Remco, this is the guy. Then he went, and a week later went and won the, he just this week won the European Championships time trial. Right. First rider in history. He holds the Olympic time trial title, the world time trial title, the Belgian national title, and the European title. He's got four jerseys right now, or four titles right now. No one's ever done that before. Like, I mean, even Filippo Ganna, who we saw in the right. Vuelta, averaged like 58.5K an hour or something in that time trial. Like, the guy that we thought that was the master, right? He was kind of like the Chris Boardman of the modern era. And then Remco is just like, yeah. So it's, yeah, his form is there. Interesting. So this is going to be to see how he develops and see how getting on that squad, on that Red Bull Bora team, how that helps him.
Now he has all four of those jerseys. Olympic champion doesn't give you a specific jersey to wear.
Titles, I should say. Yeah. But three jerseys, four titles.
Going for that. And so I was thinking, I'm like, but then obviously world champion trumps European champion and national champion. So will he ever even wear either of the, you know, he won't wear the national champion or the European champion jersey all year, I wouldn't think. He'll just, for time in his time trial, he'll just be wearing the world champion jersey.
Yeah. I think it would be cool.
Right? Trump's.
They should do like a combine jersey. Sorry. Yeah. Combine jersey like they used to do in the tour. It could be part worlds, part Euro, part Belgium. You know, some special dispensation for that. I don't know. I think that would be kind of fun.
Everybody gets a taste, a little taste, you know, just of the jersey.
Sorry, Ed, you were saying.
Oh, well, we have the European Road Race Championships coming up this weekend, and that could be spectacular. It's interesting to see the hype building around that race. I remember who wins it, but like there's a lot of hype going into it. Pogačar might attack early and do his thing, or he might not. It'd be interesting if Remco and him can go at it. And I assume Remco will ride Lombardia as well. So, I mean, right. You can't give Pogačar all these races. I mean, maybe, right. But...
Yeah, I mean, we've got Pogačar, like you said, Evenepoel, and still we got Vingegaard's going to race, right? He didn't go to the Worlds. I mean, you can see some of these guys, right? Like sometimes you do that big travel to Africa and then back and you're kind of running on adrenaline, but now there's another several days for all of that to settle in, or if you might have picked something up. It'll be interesting to see how the riders that did all that travel do by this weekend versus the ones that didn't travel to Africa for that. But I mean, shit, we've got Juan Ayuso. He was riding well. We got Almeida.
Del Toro.
Yeah. Well, no, because he's Mexican, so no Euro championships.
Oh, right.
I was thinking about that.
Lombardia.
Yeah.
Lombardia.
Yeah. And that Roman Gregoire, who won two stages of the Tour of Luxembourg. I'm sorry, I didn't know if you guys got a chance to watch that. He was pretty spectacular there.
Yeah, I have.
I didn't touch
either.
On that on the last episode. He won the first stage, and he led the sprint out for like 350 meters uphill and basically just rode everybody off his wheel. Riders tried to come around him and then just got dropped. It was, if you have a chance to go back and watch that, he bookended the Tour of Luxembourg the first day and the last day. So he's riding really well. And that, and Skelmoza too, fourth at the Worlds. So.
Yeah. And like you said, we're getting Jonas in the fall. I mean, normally we never get Jonas after the Tour, so it's a treat to get him racing still. Yeah. So he may be good this weekend.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see.
Yeah. Well, the Danish, they have a pretty strong looking team, a pretty full team there. It's not a Mads Pedersen type of course, I guess, or he's done because he's not, at least wasn't on their start list when I checked before we started.
He just announced today that he's sick and his season is over.
Well, there we go. Yeah.
Who was that just announced it, you said?
Mads Pedersen. Ah.
Yeah, he's done. He extracted all the form there is out of the 2025 season. need time for a rest.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
I mean, that's good for him that he realizes that you do have to rest. You need to know how your body works. And so, here's the start list here. Right. So Slovenia's got 8 riders starting, as does 7 riders from Denmark, Belgium, But I'm looking at Belgium, they've got Evenepoel, and Tish Benoot. So no Wout, no Vanderpool for the Netherlands. Actually Vanderpool was in LA this week, did a ride in, it almost looked like it was in Griffith Park. So
it was the ponies ride.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so everyone was ready with the drones and the scooters and the phones. He was heavily documented.
Yeah, the French have a pretty strong looking team. Anyway, yeah, it should be pretty interesting there. And the women's side looks a little more. I mean, not like there's going to be such a battle of them, but my question is the Dutch team going to show their prowess of not being able to get unified behind one rider and not be able to race as a team again, or are they actually going to be able to pull it off? I hope they can pull it off. They're usually they can't go for a singular goal. It doesn't look like to me. And then there's the teams look pretty strong on the women's side too. I got the Dutch, the Italians, the French, Poland has a full team behind the Uedoma, the Swiss, the Germans. I think both of those races should be pretty good. So I haven't looked like what the weather's like. I do not know what the course is like, but, the racing looks like it could be exciting, and that's all we really can ask for. Huh?
Yeah.
So, and then what are we, road racing? Any other thoughts on that?
You know what? I've honestly, other than watching some of the world stuff, I've been super busy and I've only been getting pieces of everything, so I haven't been able to deep dive into any more of the road racing. Yeah, and
Well,
seeing some of the
Lombardia is
smaller
always
stuff.
one of my absolute favorites. You
Oh
know,
yeah.
Greg LeMond, Sean Kelly would show up well for Lombardia, and I always look forward to it. It's a spectacular course, although they change it from year to year.
Right.
I just the Race of the Falling Leaves is going to be spectacular in 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's a great one. Closes out the season for those.
Yeah. Well, and we'll.
Unless, of course, you're unlucky and you have to go race the tour of whatever it is, the one that Ayuso
Oh,
got out of by
okay.
winning the state tour of Quan Chai or whatever. You don't want to have to go to those, but.
Well, and there's some
With
that.
the,
Sorry, go ahead.
oh, with all respect to the Chinese race, I mean, I think it's great that they're spreading cycling around the world. I think it's great when we move off the continent of Europe and into
Absolutely.
Africa, and we have racing around the world. But I feel bad for those guys having to travel all that way, and it's a little bit of a silly season race, so I feel for them.
Yeah,
Yeah, there's.
that's really it. After the end of a whole year of hopping on planes and being in and out, you're just like, oh, you wish your last race was, by your hometown, not having to hop on a plane. But there's also money over there, and usually you can take your family along for the vacation. They give a lot of perks, so they can be good trips too. Good races.
Well, I seem to remember the UCI used to do some trip down to like Aruba or Curacao in the fall. They used to take the riders after
Oh
the
yeah.
World Cup, right? It was the same type of thing, those vacation races, except they went to the Caribbean, and I think all the riders wanted to go there.
Yeah, that was the one everybody put their hand up for.
Yeah.
The gravy races, as we like to call them, right?
Exactly.
The
Yeah.
gravy races. End of the
Well,
year, start money, good climate.
exactly.
Some
And
gravy.
so there's a little mountain bike racing going on up in Lake Placid too.
Ooh, yeah.
And right before we came on, when Ed and I were talking, we saw that Christopher Blevins just won, and he tied up the overall championship for the World Cup for short track with his
Oh,
win in Lake
nice.
Placid. So that's pretty cool. Yeah, and I think so. They must run the short track on Friday, and then the
Yep.
XCO is on the weekends.
Yeah, that's
Yeah,
right.
I
'Cause it's
liked.
a yeah.
Oh, I like seeing him win in commanding fashion. I didn't watch today, but I just wanted him to seal the deal and really come out as a commanding, because he was so dominant. I don't know how many he won. I think four or five, maybe even
Yeah.
six short tracks this year. And I just wanted that story to remain his dominant fashion, because when you get to the longer Olympic distance race, he seems to struggle and he's not in the results. So, and the other thing I would say about him is I watched him ride at Rock Cobbler 3 years ago on some of those amazing climbs, and he was just spectacular to watch. You know, he's a spectacular rider to watch, and he
Yeah.
should be appreciated.
Yeah. Well, and I'm putting my nod up for his best short track win of the year was the one where his chain came off at the start of the hill on the last lap, and he reached down, put it back on last position, worked back up to the front, passed, and had the win. Just the fact that most pros don't even know how to put their chain back on, or a lot of them in any situation, let alone while you're
True.
actually still vying for the win.
Yeah.
So that was quite impressive.
That's Grace under pressure versus maybe Remco when he was having seat problems
Oh, yeah.
at the Worlds last weekend, right? I mean, that's like the dichotomy of that right there. Can you keep it cool and fix it and make it happen,
That's
or
right.
not? Yeah. And he did.
Yeah. So
So
do we have a final determination of what the offending tech glitch was with the seat post? Was it
Well,
a broken seat? Was it a
alleged
rail?
there's
Was it
it's
a
the seat might have slipped, or it might have broke, or the
Right.
post slipped on the gold bike, and he only had one gold bike, so he went to his spare bike, and then he didn't like the nose angle of his seat, and then he went back to the gold bike. So
Right.
whether the seat broke. And then his mechanic came out and said, the position on the second bike was exactly his position. So his mechanic kind of threw him under the bus a little bit there.
Right.
So,
Right.
but
Maybe he was on. Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
he was saying he was losing power, but you could just see that the race, he didn't have it and he wasn't racing well. And I think that there was some mind games going on inside his own mind at that point too. Right. So.
Right. Yeah. It's possible if his other one had slipped down and he was riding it, you know, what, for whatever reason, if the saddle broke or the seat post slipped a little bit and it was riding it nose down, it wasn't feeling great. But then you get back on your bike that's in the correct position, it might feel odd and feel nose up. Maybe he was just getting a little bit discombobulated out there. But maybe that's part of what you were talking about Remco losing his cool at times and seeing like, you know, you need to be sitting there, right? And just kind of mellow, have a drink of water, pull your computer off to switch it. But he was definitely had some calisthenic kicks going on there while he was frustrated.
Yeah, and he should have looked back to see if the team car was there, you know, like don't pull over and like he was pulling over without knowing whether the team car was ready or there. And it's important for our listeners to know that during the Olympics and the World Championships, it's the only two races in the year where radios aren't allowed. So he didn't have radio communication. But he was, you know, he pulled over to the side. He's taking his Garmin off. He's waiting. He's waiting too long. He should have looked back and visually seen the car before he went for it. But
yeah, especially because it wasn't like he had a flat. I mean, no, you know, obviously if your saddle doesn't feel quite right, that's a big deal too. But in that moment, you know, as you can still be moving, to just completely stop and think your team car is going to be there. Yeah, that's definitely a tricky part of those races with no radios and the guys are so used to it. But yeah, I don't know. Well, if it was a saddle that broke, if it was in fact a saddle that broke, hey, KS, if it was in fact a saddle that broke, that's one tech failure. If it was a seat post that just slipped, that would also be another tech failure. But it is amazing to me that at like the peak of the sport, one of the top favorites, that you can still have a mechanical of that nature, you know, at that level. That seems like it was something that would have been solvable.
Well, it brings up, you know, the two bolt seat posts that we've always talked about.
Right.
You know, Suntour was probably the, I think Kurt has a picture. Hopefully he can share it with us. Of
Campinovo record was the first two bolt, I believe.
Yeah. And Campinovo record, then Suntour Superb. And then interestingly, in the mountain bike world, we had Thompson.
There's the Novo record post.
Yeah.
Yeah. The two bolt and then the, yeah.
They won't slip.
This was the original ultimate.
Yeah. Look at that.
The only challenge with this post was that it was a 10 millimeter hex head that you had to get up in between the saddle and the top of the post. And you did like these, eighth of a circle turns to get it adjusted. But the cool thing you guys were talking about the two bolt is you've got this infinite amount of micro adjustment within a range. And once it's tight, it won't slip because it can't go anywhere. I mean this was the original. I remember Campy, I should have found the picture. They actually made a special wrench that was like shaped. It had a little jog in it. Yeah.
That's
to get up underneath there. You know, and then
have that wrench.
Oh, you got one of those? Awesome. I never had one of those. I just pulled the saddle up and.
Yeah. Before split saddles, think how great it would be with the split saddles. The seat post would be easy. Just have a nice T wrench, you know, hex head. You could go right down on there.
Yeah. Well, adding to this topic, we were always pretty conservative. The three of us probably were bigger guys. All three of us rode two bolt seat posts. We also probably refused early alloy or, you know, we never rode carbon fiber rails. We rode steel rails. You know, I have carbon fiber rails on my mountain bike right now, and boy, they're comfortable, but they could break. And we were always pretty conservative in our racing equipment when it came to some of this stuff. And, you know, Remco could have been on a carbon rail seat that failed on a, you know, some of those rough cobble sections. So,
We don't know exactly what failed other than the seat slipped, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's back to what you're talking about. Did the post slip in the frame? Did the seat slip in the cradle? Did it go nose up? Did it go nose down? I mean, I can't understand a dude like him, right? Who's so fine tuned
with his position, especially with a time trial, that if it does get out of whack, how that could mess with your, right? You could start cramping, have that happen just because it's like F1, man. And when you get those riders that are so fine-tuned at that high of a level, those little changes, while you should be able to adapt, sometimes your body just can't do it because you are so fine-tuned. So who knows if we'll ever know actually what really happened. I don't think we do yet.
Which, what do you think about that from a PR? I was just going to say, I was thinking about this. What do you think about that from a PR standpoint, where you're saying, oh, you don't know what happens. Like, I wonder on the, I can understand on the one side of Specialized had a part that failed. They don't want to say, hey, our whatever $400 3D printed saddle, the rails broke or the seat post slipped. But at the same time, if you don't come out and just say, hey, it's racing and stream conditions, that's why we test it. Sometimes stuff happens. Here's what happens. It feels like it gives, it just kind of lets it spin out. No, nobody really knows. I guess it's the denial, you know, deny it or not really give the full details on it. But what do you guys think about that?
Well, I really like this point that you're making. I think it's an important one. I think your second answer was your best answer from a PR perspective. I feel like owning it would have been a good move, but I bet you there's so much mixed information from the mechanic and from Remco. Mm. Specialized doesn't know where to plant their flag, right, and how to respond, because they don't know where the truth lies. There was a little bit of misinformation. And one of the characters involved is Remco's cousin. Like, maybe there's a mechanic is Remco's cousin or something. So
you got a cousin.
The plot
in there
thickens. Well, you know what? I think we'll just wait and see what happens, because we could beat this up for a long time. But ultimately, and I don't know. Is you have a Specialized post on your XCO bike, Ed? Yep. Is that a 2-bolt post? Do you recall?
Well, I'm shocked that I don't know, because I'm so focused on the dropper post part of it and where the battery sits and stuff. And it doesn't creak, which, boy, do I appreciate. I'm a real nitpicker for noises, and it's everything in the seat zone is quiet. So I'm just like so thankful for that. But, you know, I'm embarrassed to tell you whether it's 2-bolt or not.
Well, actually, I forgot you have a dropper post on there. So you probably have a RockShox post and not a Specialized post.
Correct. Right?
So I bet it is a 2-bolt. I think most of the mountain bike posts are, you know. So I've got my new bike. It came with a seat post, and I was very happy that it came with a 2-bolt.
2-bolt.
Right? So you got a bolt here, you got a bolt there. So the rear one tightens from the underside. So you can get, you can get a wrench in here. I have a T wrench. The front one actually has, it's pretty cool. So it does have a hex on the top, right? It's a 5 mil. You can pop that in there. But if you don't have a saddle with a cutout, how are you going to get to that?
Right.
It's got a little thumb dial, right? So you can, because you don't have to totally snug it to get it tight. You can, all the snugging can be done in the back one because it rocks the cradle. But yeah. I love these posts, one, because they don't slip, but two, because you can adjust it a fraction of a degree up and down. They're awesome. So people, you want it. I mean, I don't know. I know Zip does 2-bolt posts, although I don't know if the newer ones are. I've had some of these single bolt ones where the bolt comes through the side. I have an Envy post. And like,
I'm giving double thumbs down to those. As a bike fitter, I can tell you there's nothing worse than when you want to adjust somebody's saddle down like 1 degree and you've got everything else set up and it's some conglomeration of pressure and everything that pulls it all together and you're loosening, you're trying to just tap it and it just falls apart. I'm giving, even though we haven't maybe had an official amateur today, I'm giving amateur to any engineer who designed a seat post who's never actually tried to do a bike fit on somebody or dial your position. It may be lighter, but that's amateur. About all. Yeah, amateur.
The 2-bolt post, if anybody's looking for that, say lightweight, fine and dandy until you're carrying it home.
Now, as the three of us all know, I came up with a term way back in my road racing days that was very sensitive to position changes called PSN, position sensitivity neuroses, which I believe I led the pack on that one. And when we were talking about two bolt seat posts in the Centaur Superb Pro, I had a Centaur Superb Pro seat post that I had held on to over the years. And the year that I had my best year at the Core States Philly Championship, where I got ninth, my best finish at that event, I was in the midst of some real PSN woes and actually carried a little 5 mil Allen key in my pocket and could micro adjust the tilt of the saddle while I was riding that day. So maybe a bit excessive of my PSN, but true.
Well, Eddie Merckx was the original PSN. If you watch the famous movie Sunday in Hell. You'll remember there's like a train crossing and they had to wait while the train's going by, and he's like got his tape measure out. So I think Eddie Merckx was the original PSN.
He was the original PSN. And interestingly enough, the reason I read an article about that, and they talked about, you know, that movie and his positioning, and most people don't remember, he had a really bad crash on the Durney, you know, motor pacing on the track, where like his coach and the guy was driving it died, and he crashed and really messed up his back. And he said that was where all his PSN came from, like even in that race, that some days he would be riding and his back would just feel tight, and so he would adjust it down a little bit or adjust it up. And if you guys remember the Campy seat binder bolts in those days, they were volatile. You know, you could sometimes could get 20 tightens and loosens out of them, and sometimes three, and you're just going, oh, and then you'd hear that thing snap, and oh. So that was, you know, that was risky on his part too.
Yeah, in defense of Remco a little bit, he did say that his Lombardia crash, which was horrific, by the way, he crashed over that stone bridge. He said that his back, or in his crash with the getting doored by the postal worker this last winter, he said that his back problems were activated by the slipping saddle, and that he, you know, legacy problems with his back. So I have some empathy for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Vanderpool's got a similar back issue from when he crashed at the Tokyo Olympics in 2021, and it's flared up on him at times in early season, and he's had to take time off, you know, to let it come down. So definitely those old injuries, this just kind of dig in, and they can pop up their head at times.
Especially
so we have some more segments that we can get to, but KS, I know you had the hard stop, and we've hit your hard stop time.
Yeah.
Should we wrap it up, or should we move through our little wrap up segments here?
I mean, we got our wrap up. I got a couple of minutes. Yeah. Or and I can let you guys finish it too. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, I think what beyond the two bolt seat post, I think the other amateur was Remco outwardly showing his frustration. Everyone must have seen the video or the stills of him being a footballer and kicking the air as he was waiting for the bike. But then I got to thinking, I don't believe the riders are allowed to use radios at the Worlds. So maybe there was a miscommunication. Perhaps he thought his car was there and it wasn't. But you can always just, you know, turn around and look back. So who knows? Who knows what happened? But showing that outward frustration, I don't know. Amateur.
Shows that you're losing it. At the same time, you would hope if you're Remco and you're potentially in position to win the road race, that somehow your team would have that stuff figured out. So there's both, but I agree, you still got to keep your cool when you're paid that much money to represent, you know, to represent your sponsors.
Yeah. And I love picking apart Remco-isms. You know, he pulls over, he doesn't look to see if the team car is there. He pulls over, he's got time to get his Garmin off. There's still no mechanic, still no team car. He uses a leash because he wants his Garmin never to go away, because he's very detailed. He doesn't want his Garmin to go flying down the road in a crash. He uses a leash. He's taken off the leash, still no mechanic. You know, he was detailed on one aspect, but not in making sure his mechanic was there before he pulled over.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah. Well, that's it. Yeah. And I mean, I guess, and the what went wrong is, will we ever know? Will we ever know
what happened to a seat post?
With seat post gate. Yeah, Watergate keeps giving, doesn't it? We got seat post gate now. Well, and I think, Ed, you were looking at possibly a new segment here, huh?
Yeah, we got to round this out. We got to polish it.
Yeah.
We got to pull it up on the spinning wheel and make sure it fits. Pete Stetna gets picked on a lot in the gravel world, and I think he's a gravel cycling owes Pete a lot, and he gets picked on a lot. He used to, you know, come down hard on aero bars, come down hard on too much team tactics in the spirit of gravel conflict. So he gets picked on a lot. So I was thinking about the positive Pete would be a little section in homage to paying a little respect to positive Pete. I had a great experience. I just got an Outbound Lights and a lighting company out of Chicago, Illinois. And I got it and I was like, how am I going to mount this on my one piece bar? I have a one piece Reval control cockpit. And I just, they said that, you know, all over their website, this is Tom, come, you know, email him. He'll write you back. So I'm like, oh, I'll email him. And he wrote me right back. He's all, hey, for $10, we'll sell you a 3D printed mount that you can mount your light, and we'll ship it to you free. No shipping charge. And I just thought that, you know, sometimes in our podcast, we're focusing maybe on a little bit on the negative, but we ought to focus on when the industry or an athlete or a coach or somebody does something really positive.
Yeah.
And pay a little homage to the Stetna family that cycling owes a lot to, by the way. I mean, Shimano is a solid company in the United States because of Pete's uncle. The Stetnas were, you know, winners of the Coors Classic. Pete's done a lot for gravel. He dropped today that, you know, in the future he might become a sports agent and help young riders with the activation that's so required in the marketing world now as a professional athlete. And what I mean by that is, like, it's not necessarily signing the sponsorship contracts. It's how you're going to activate and engage the community, kind of like we're going to do at the Bovine Classic. You know, Pete's wants to teach young riders how to engage their base and get the most out of it. So the positive Pete, we'll see if it sticks.
All right. Positive Pete. I like it.
I like that one too. We'll have to, we'll run it by him. Yeah. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah,
well,
good.
I do. I need to jump. I don't know if you guys have more to talk about here.
I think we're good.
Peace out.
Yeah. We're going to peace out.
Okay.
The next one.
All right. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks everybody for watching, for listening. Yeah. Give us a follow, a like, and we'll see you in Atascadero in a few weeks.
That's right. Okay.